Well, hello, guys. How are you? It's Nicole, and you have reached my podcast, The Cure for Chronic Pain, with me, Nicole Sachs. And oh my goodness, do we find ourselves in wacky, wacky times. So today I'm going to bring to you a real-time heal, but the bizarre part of that is that we recorded this before, like right before this whole global pandemic. And so it's so interesting to see a snapshot of something the moment before, because just the cadence in our voices and the carefree nature by which I say, oh, I just put my kids on the school bus, just makes it feel like it's a different time altogether. And as I'm sure many of you relate to, this day by day, it feels like it's a different time altogether. Yesterday feels different than the day before, and I imagine perhaps tomorrow. So, you know, we're living in a bit of a turbulent moment, and that's okay. We're getting through it. Yesterday, I taught a really incredible virtual mini retreat. I'm trying to schedule them as often as possible. They're selling out the moment they're posted. But if you are a listener who has not seen any of my postings about my virtual mini retreats, definitely go and join my free and private Facebook community, Journal Speak with Nicole Sachs, LCSW. If you search that name on Facebook, you will get an opportunity to click and join my community. And I advertise everything I do there first, because I like to let my community avail themselves of my opportunities first, and then I'll usually bring it to Instagram, where you could find me at NJ Sachs. And then, of course, I also try to send out email blasts. But the problem with these virtual retreats, which is the great thing about them, but also the problem, is that they keep selling out so immediately. Advertising for them seems challenging and also almost like unnecessary, because as soon as I post them, they sell out. So if you are a listener who hasn't seen these offerings, they're really inexpensive. It's $35.99 a person to join me on a Zoom call. I limit it to 25 people per session so we can really talk and be together. Everyone gets their questions answered. Everyone hears everyone else's questions. And also I record it only for the purpose of the group. It's a free recording that you can keep forever, and I'm not selling it to anyone else. So if your question is personal and you don't want it out on the internet, it will never be. So anyway, I just posted a second offering of the retreat I taught yesterday, which is called Concrete Ways to Find Peace and Choose Love Over Fear During These Trying Times. As of this moment, it is still open. So go over to the Journal Speak group on Facebook and you'll see a link to join it. If by now, whenever you're listening, it's already sold out, I'm probably offering more. I'm going to do the best I can to offer them, because all of my business for the next few months is canceled. 1440 was postponed until October. So far, Omega, which is scheduled for August 9th through the 14th, is on. I've had no indication that that is canceled, and my great hope is that by then we will all be able to be together physically again. If indeed you are interested in spending time and really doing a deep dive with myself and my incredible guest instructors at Omega for 5 days in August, I would definitely sign up now. You will get 100% of your money back if it is canceled or postponed. So there's no risk in signing up and just putting your name in and putting your intention there that you'll be there. You know, one of my colleagues who I have great respect for always says, the moment you make the commitment, the healing starts right then. It starts right then because your mindset is there and your intention is there and you know where you're going. And that can be a really powerful way to begin healing. So it's no risk for you. You will get every penny back if the retreat does not happen on those exact dates. And they also have a really pretty liberal cancellation policy, even if you just change your mind. So check out that offering, eomega.org, or the link is on my website, thecureforchronicpain.com. The link for Omega is on the homepage. It's also on the retreats tab, and it's also on the resources tab. So there's plenty of ways to find it. And it's definitely a good idea to sign up for that kind of thing now and start your intention toward healing. And in the meantime, as I said, I have these virtual mini retreats that I'm running weekly, almost weekly. I think I'm trying to take a week off here and there just to get my shit together because I have these five kids who are homeschooling and also trying to, you know, do other things that I can do remotely. But anyway, so it was so nice. For those of you who are listening who were on my mini retreat yesterday, it was so awesome to be with you guys. So nice, so connected, so heartwarming. You know, tears in my eyes seeing people from all over the world. We had five countries represented and people all over the United States. And, you know, I keep trying to find a silver lining to this worldwide quarantine. And it is definitely the feeling of being able to include people from all over, all walks of life in these gatherings I'm creating because it never occurred to me to do them before. You know, it's just one of those things. It never occurred to me to get on a Zoom call and to have this sort of Brady Bunch situation where we're all in our little boxes and we're talking to each other and we're sharing and I see your bright smiles and I see your tears and I can be there for all of it and so can all of us. So it's really been heartwarming and I hope that you're keeping well and staying safe and making good choices. In this time, I know I am and I'm feeling better all the time that I'm doing what I think is the right thing, which is shelter in place, taking care of my family, taking care of my 80-year-old mother who is amazing and vibrant and so healthy, but I don't want her sick. So I basically said, you stay home, you listen to me. And she's listening to me. So shout out to Mom if you're listening right now. And she's letting me buy her groceries. And so that is, you know, and I get in and out really quick. I stay 6 feet away from everyone. I'm doing all the right things. Okay. The other thing I want to mention, I have gotten unsolicited requests, and I really do appreciate them, of people who are asking where they can donate to my cause, knowing that in this time of the next few months, I will not be having the income I would have had to teach and travel and consult as I normally would to companies and to large groups and small. And so I have answered that call and I do appreciate that because doing things like this for free, like the podcast and so many of my offerings that are for free on my website and my YouTube channel, they do require time, money, and energy of mine and I'm not getting that much more of an income and I do want to offer them freely. So if you would like to donate to this podcast and allow it to keep going regardless of the environment that we live in right now, the global environment, I added a donate button to the homepage of my website. If you scroll down when you're on the homepage, you'll see a black box that says donate. They make it really easy through Squarespace. You just click on the box, you enter in your information, and 100% of your donation will go directly to this podcast and keeping it going. So if you're valuing it, I really, really do appreciate your contribution. Okay, I think that's all I have to say about housekeeping. I did this incredible real-time heal with Adam White. We did it right before everything hit the fan. So as I say, you'll hear a cadence in my voice that is a bit more free. And that's fine. You know, I don't have an issue with the emotional shift that has happened in me since this began. I'm definitely a bit more serious. I'm definitely a bit less free, but it's okay because these times require that and I'm okay with that. When I was re-listening to the podcast and editing it, it occurred to me that it just feels different. It feels different, especially the way I say, and I just put my kids on the bus. It's like, no, my kids aren't taking a bus for a long time and that's okay with me. I have them here with me. They're safe, they're comfortable and they're learning. So I hope that your family or you, if you're on your own, are doing okay. And I send you tremendous love and connection during this time. And I hope you enjoy this impactful and important real-time heal that I did with Adam. Hey guys, I am here for me very early morning and for him not so much with Adam White. Welcome, Adam.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. I just dropped my kids at the bus. For me, it's 7:30 and Adam is in the UK. What time is it for you?
Yeah, it's 12:30, midday-ish.
All right. So Adam has that nice chill middle of the day feeling, and I'm like just trying to put my brain on. But in any case, we are here today for a real-time heal. Adam reached out to me after my plea for more men, please, more men to join us in our community. And he obliged. So Adam, I'm going to do what I always do, which is pretend we're in a regular therapy session, and I'm going to say to you, tell me your story, and then we're going to find out how I can help you today.
Cool. Okay, so I'll apologize in advance because it's a bit of a long story, but up until about 4 years ago, I was a strength and conditioning coach, personal trainer, sort of amateur athlete level in terms of like training. My sports were kind of CrossFit and mountain biking. Basically, you can imagine someone who's not a paid pro because they're not technically good enough, but still trains as hard.
Right.
Anyway, I was actually living in New Zealand at the time, and I just started to get signs of aches, pains, and I mean, I should just say I wasn't totally. You know, I'm fully aware what aches and pains are. You know, if you're into sports, they kind of come with the territory. But these sorts of aches and pains were incapacitating. You know, like I felt like I just couldn't do what I normally do.
Right.
Anyway, that kind of turned into really bad fatigue, general malaise, digestive issues, headaches, migraines. We came back from New Zealand, and it kind of, over the space of a year, it kind of morphed into like gastritis. I actually had a endoscopy, a camera down my throat that shows like a pre-ulcerated type stomach, that sort of scenario. You know, cutting that story really short, over the last 2 years that the gastritis has been going on, it's gradually been getting harder to eat lots of foods, and my activity exercise levels have dropped considerably. To the point where I probably only do like 10% of what I used to do. And you know, work and general life gets harder. Just due to levels of fatigue and feeling of unwellness. And one of the reasons I was quite keen to talk to you really was because I guess I'm not the you know, lots of people I'm sure that you speak with have, you know, chronic pain, and I can relate to that, but fortunately maybe not quite as bad as some of your followers can. But it's a myriad of other symptoms that seem to have no explanation in terms of mainstream medical world.
Right.
Of which I've had several tests and, you know, all sorts of other home sort of private medical sort of care, you know, in terms of paying for testing, et cetera, et cetera. That's kind of trying to cut what is a long story as short to not bore your bore the listeners. But so it's sort of a 4 year journey. And something I probably should have added, that this was the beginning symptom, if you like, was about 6 months of fairly crippling anxiety, which I think, you know, in hindsight, looking back, has been a factor in my entire life. I just did fairly well at either suppressing it, avoiding it, or doing sport to try and, you know, live in the moment, so to speak. So anxiety has obviously been a massive part of this whole journey, and as is the case, I think, with any unexplained illness, health anxiety is the main factor for me. You know, my anxiety doesn't cover things like, you know, talking in front of public or being in social environments. My anxiety is almost entirely associated to my health.
Right.
I mean, it spans in, it has its fingers in other elements of my life, I guess, but predominantly it's health-related anxiety. I don't know how much more you want me to
okay, well, let me ask some questions.
Yeah, of course.
Let me ask some questions. Yeah. And then we're gonna go deeper into certain
sure,
parts of this.
Sure.
My first question is, at the very, very beginning of this journey. So I think I don't know if it was before you moved to New Zealand. And I also want to clarify, when you say we returned from New Zealand, New Zealand wasn't supposed to be a trip, right? New Zealand was supposed to be a move.
No, you're absolutely right. Yeah, it was supposed to be a move. Yeah, it was meant to be long term. My wife and I have done a fair bit of traveling over the years, and we'd spent some time in New Zealand. And for one reason or another, now looking back and analyzing, it was probably part of running away from something personally. But you're right. It wasn't meant to be a short-term trip, no.
So the fact that you returned to the UK was because of your illness. Is that true?
Yeah. I mean, when you're not a resident in a place, healthcare is expensive. And there's an element of feeling, you know, when your life feels like it's falling apart, being away from normality or familiarity is a bit daunting. So
of course, but I mean, it's important to note that this was a really big deal.
It was genuinely massive. Yeah.
I mean, because for you and your wife to make a decision to move halfway across the world and to be excited about it and to be all about it, and then because of this unexplained myriad conditions have to return back home, that's a big deal in your life.
Yeah. And it wasn't helped, unfortunately, that I actually got you take an already anxious person, and then I got a DVT, a deep vein thrombosis in my leg on the flight to New Zealand. So I got off the plane the other side with the intention of starting our new life, and I had to be on like pretty powerful blood thinner medication for 3 months to stop my lungs clotting. So it was a bit of a, you can imagine, you know, someone who's already anxious about their health, and then you're suddenly faced with new life and, you know, a serious sort of medical, an issue.
A situation. So we're going to talk first about the anxiety. So I want to say something about anxiety that, of which I am certain, both in my own body and in thousands of people I've worked with over the years. Anxiety is a TMS equivalent 100%.
Yeah.
So anxiety is back pain. Back pain is migraine. Migraine is irritable bowel and all that other digestive stuff. It's all exactly the same because it comes from one place, which is brain science.
Yeah.
So it's very important to understand that we have to look at the anxiety with the exact same lens that we see someone who came to me and said back pain. So I want to start with the anxiety. So what was going on right at the time that all of this started?
In terms of the start of the anxiety even?
Yeah, well, I mean, because you probably have – do me a favor, Adam, turn me down for you. So I just hear a little bit of an echo. So if you can just turn your volume down so you can hear me, but maybe not so blasting in your ears. I keep forgetting to tell people to do this, and every time I re-listen to these interviews, I'm like, Nicole, tell them next time.
Is that better?
Yeah, that'll be good.
Okay.
Yeah. So I imagine there was a time in your life where there was a before.
Yeah. Okay.
I want to hear about then and when it started and what was going on in your life at the time.
Okay, great. So in 2015, my wife and I took a year off and had, a year that people would sort of dream of. We quit our jobs, closed my small business, and we went traveling for a year, basically. We're very grateful, fortunate. It was amazing. And lots of things lined up in terms of friends and family to make it possible. So that was great. So we had this year traveling around the world, living in a van, riding our bikes and doing some racing, which we both, you know, has been our life for some time. And when we came back from traveling that year, end of 2015, we lived in Bristol. And those 6 months in Bristol were fairly stressful. Before we went traveling, we were financially much more secure. We had good jobs that paid. And when we moved back to Bristol, I was not able to get back into the strength and conditioning world, personal training world. And my wife was doing a great job, but not earning great money. So anyway, these 6 months in Bristol were
Why were you unable to get back into the world?
Mainly it was just building a successful personal training business takes quite a lot of time and effort. So it was more just location and, yeah, less of an ideal situation for it, I guess, is the easiest way to explain it.
Okay.
So we spent these 6 months in Bristol, which were, I guess, fairly more stressful than our lives were had just been, because we just had this amazing year traveling, right? So
I'd say extremely more would probably
Okay. And I just put my heart and soul into training. So I just, you know, every spare minute I had was like either in the gym or riding my bike. And this is where it starts to go a bit awry. We basically made the decision that we were going to try and move to New Zealand. So, you know, we did the visas and the health checks and all that sort of stuff. And I had my relationship with my mother is kind of tumultuous, shall we say. Only child, single parent, blah, blah, blah. And we made the decision that for a few months before we moved to New Zealand, that we would move back in with my mum down south just to get out of the rental house and sort of save some money for a couple of months.
Okay.
And at the same time as moving back, I had a business trip to China. And for some reason, the business trip to China caused a huge amount of stress. I didn't sleep for a week, one reason or another. And then when I came back to my mother's, where we just moved back to, so this is really interesting. I'm sure some of your listeners will relate to this. Like I said earlier, anxiety, I think, has always been a part of my life. But I'd came back from China a couple of days previous, and I was sat in my mother's sort of dining area doing some work on the laptop. And I literally just got slapped in the face with a full blown anxiety attack. Now I kind of recognize the feeling, but then obviously it was completely alien, you know, I literally thought I was dying.
What did it feel like? What did it feel like?
Sweaty palms, heart racing, tight chest, utter terror. Like, I can't, you know, people that have had them will know what I mean. But for those that haven't, it's a feeling of impending doom, you know, like your world is about to end, you know. And anyway, those kind of anxiety attacks, you know, uncontrollable crying, just fear, like terrified, went on for a good couple of months before New Zealand. And at the same time, relations with my mum, you know, things, she was obviously fairly stressed about us moving to the other side of the world. And she has her own anxieties and fears, and that she obviously doesn't talk about, but I'm aware of. So that relationship got quite fraught in the last month as well. So I guess the before was New Zealand, traveling that year, and then the anxiety in the months running up to moving away.
Okay. Okay, so I have it now.
Okay, yeah.
and here's the thing, Adam.
Mm.
What I need for you to do. So I'm gonna say a lot of stuff.
And, yeah, sure.
But before I do, what I want to say is this: if you want to be well, which you do, because even though I know you're fighting the belief a little bit,
that's fair.
It's a struggle for you to accept that all these myriad conditions could be from one space and that one sort of intention could release them. So what I'm going to say to you is this: even though you kind of told us at the beginning of the session all these other things that are equivalents, meaning, you know, you got the stomach thing and you had the headaches and the migraines and body pains. And obviously it was extreme enough to take you from a move that had been so well thought out and so complicated and difficult, making you move back home. So these are big, big deals. Okay.
Yeah.
So even though you told me about all of that, none of that matters. The only thing that matters is this panic attack and your relationship with your mother.
Yeah. Okay.
It's the only thing that matters, because all the rest of it is just TMS taking the ball and running with it down to the goal line.
Yeah,
That's the only – the rest of it is just like – I say this often. It's like you're a pinball machine And so you pull the ball back, and that pulled back ball is all that repressed emotion that's been held, probably since you were a little boy being raised by the single mother,
yeah,
which
absolutely.
We're going to get back to.
Yeah.
And then when it's released, the first ping it makes is you had a horrible panic attack. Okay,
yeah.
Well, that's the first ping. But then what happens is a panic attack can't last forever. So it pings back.
Yeah.
And now it's got momentum, right?
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
got velocity. So it's now it's gonna ping somewhere else. Well, where did it go? Who cares? It went to your stomach, it went to your head, it doesn't actually matter. Which is why I want to have everybody listening understand that the place that your TMS is showing up is immaterial. It might make sense for you because I think sometimes the brain takes the chance to create an opening where you're going to believe it, because the whole point of the brain and the nervous system with TMS is to protect you from these feelings that they think could kill you. You know, if a little boy is raised alone by a single mother in such an enmeshed fashion, because that has to be an enmeshed fashion.
Yeah, right.
Two people against the world, you know, and all their drama. And then all those feelings are struggling to rise when he's trying to be a young man in a new marriage and try to take on the world in this way that's going to make him finally fulfilled and happy and away from all this toxicity.
Toxicity is a good word, because that's exactly what. Yeah,
we're about to get back to that one. And so I just want to say that that's what's happening.
Mm.
And so if you want to feel better, Adam, if you want this session to really matter, which, by the way, it will matter for thousands of people anyway, but I want it to matter for you. And if you're ready, what you need to do is you need to pause right now and you need to make a decision. And you need to make a decision that what I'm about to say to you is the absolute truth, and that you are going to, first of all, engage in it. We're going to talk about it and you're going to listen, but then you're going to, with certainty that this is the reason you've been sick, do the work that I ask you to do, and you will be better.
Okay.
I'm 100% sure you are the most classic TMS case on the planet. And the fact that you are wasting your energy not believing that this can help you because it's like all over your body or all that stuff is so normal. And I have such empathy for you because I so get it. But if you want to feel better, we can start that right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Totally.
Okay. All right. I love it. So what I want to do is I want to talk about what really is going on.
Okay.
So, I mean, you know, as much as you care to share, I want to talk about what it was like growing up with your mother.
Look, I'll share as much as, because, you know, this isn't just about me, you know. The journey that I've been on in the last few years, if this sort of, explosion of my life can help anybody, it's a worthwhile discussion, you know.
Absolutely.
So yeah, I mean, what do you want to know, and I'll tell you.
Well, there is a reason why you had such a panic on that in that day. There's a reason that things came to a head and you were like a volcano that boiled over.
Yeah.
And so I guess tell me, you know, when you take a minute, when you pause and think about the conflict in your life, about moving forward in your life and leaving this mother behind and all that enmeshed toxicity, tell me a little bit about your childhood. Tell me about what created this.
Okay. Right. So I'll start from the beginning, I guess. My mother was married. He died of skin cancer and a brain tumor. 6 months after his death, my mother had can't even begin to imagine the pain that she was in, but she had a bit of a fling, and I'm the result of that. Now I should just add that, because this adds to the complexity, I, as far as I was concerned, the chap that died was actually my father, and I was led to believe that until I was 25 years old.
Oh, wow. That's a long time.
Yeah. And, you know, for one reason or another, I don't claim to understand why she did that, but whatever. My childhood was intense, with a weird attachment issue with my mum. she caused me a huge amount of anguish and anxiety as a child. I spent my entire childhood on eggshells, not knowing whether she was going to be in a good mood or a bad mood. Or she had a furious temper. She never really, other than like a bit of a slapped bum occasionally, I never, you know, she wasn't violent in any way. But verbally, she was a force to be reckoned with. And she would say some pretty horrendous things to me sometimes, you know, like if I was a bit naughty, you know, if I was being a child, you know, even into my early teens, she might occasionally say things like, oh, I should have had you effing adopted, you know. Or, but on the other hand, she's the most generous individual that you would meet, you know, like, if you met her in the street and you were short of a pound and you needed some money to, I don't know, buy yourself some lunch or whatever, she would just give it to you. She's become very financially, she's a driven woman and she's worked immensely hard in her life to become financially secure. And she's helped Rachel and I a huge amount over the last 10 years that Rachel and I have been together to do some wonderful things. So she is, what's the best way to describe it? There's an emotional blackmail, I guess, is the best way to describe it. And I spent a lot of my life in that situation where I wanted to make her proud and I wanted to live up to her expectations that ultimately became my expectations. But at the same time, I didn't ever really like her. You know, I loved her out of duty. But at the same time, I started to become aware in my late teens and especially into my 20s that a large amount of my inner misery came from how I'd learned to be, if that makes sense.
How did you learn to be?
Well, that life was scary and that it was anxious and that I didn't feel like I fitted in and that, you know, only child, I spent a lot of time with adults rather than with other kids. I mean, my mother always let me have a lot of friends over because she obviously acknowledged that I was happier when I was around other people. But ultimately my mum worked a lot and I spent a lot of time with my grandparents. So they kind of brought me up almost half and half. So I often struggled with being a child, I guess is the best way to describe it. And you know, being a real kid, I was often sort of described as having an old head on a young body, if that makes sense. So I struggled to fit in. I got bullied a lot as a kid. And when I'd go out with my friends and I'd always like get, you know, 100 feet from the front door and then the nerves would start, you know, like, oh, is she going to be happy? Is she going to be grumpy? Is she going to shout at me? You know? But imagine this situation where you've got that. And then at the weekend, she's like, oh, she'll take me shopping and spend money on new stuff. You know, I never went without anything physically, but just went without a lot of stuff emotionally, I guess. So it was a tumultuous childhood and it was, I kind of learnt to be scared because obviously a large amount of her motivation to be the way that she was that she was actually terrified of life as well. You know, like we do occasionally talk now about how she had panic attacks when I was young and that she was scared that she was just going to die and leave this young child alone in a house with no one to look after him, you know. So it's obvious to me that anxiety that she was in, with me being a sponge at the age of like 4 or 5, I'm just absorbing this sort of scary atmosphere, I guess. That's the fundamentals of my childhood.
Okay, that is incredibly, incredibly helpful to me.
Mm.
And that is just absolute perfection as to why your TMS chose panic attacks to begin this journey, because you were full up, Adam. See, this is what I want you to understand. We only have a certain capacity in our unconscious to hold the amount of conflict that you just described.
Yep.
We don't have unlimited capacity. And so when it's just full up for whatever reason, and I think the reason was you relaxed. You went for a year and you had the most beautiful time and you rode your bike and you were with your, I guess she was your wife or your fiance at the time.
Yeah, we were engaged, yeah, when we went away, yeah.
Okay, so this, you had this beautiful experience where there was no way you were going to have to walk up to your mother's door in that whole year and see how she was.
No.
It was removed from you, and you had this sort of blissful break from this real trauma. And it's real trauma. I don't care if she didn't beat you or starve you. It's real trauma
to
not know where you stand as a little kid.
No, no, no.
With the only person in the world who can take care of you.
That is
real. That is not to be dismissed.
Sure.
And so you got this break and you came back, and I think you just had a flood of conflict. And so I always say to people, it's the conflict that kills.
Mm.
TMS is not about whether you feel all one way about something or all another way.
Mm.
You know, like I know I talk about my kids a lot. Like when I think about my kids, the reason I get TMS over my kids is because I love them so vehemently.
Mm.
But the fact that I love them like that makes me feel terrified all the
time.
What if something bad would happen?
That makes sense. I mean, I guess unhealthily, and I do talk to Rachel about this, but like I can unhealthily feel that way about Rachel sometimes, you know, like the fear of not having that thing, because you like it, you know, you love it so much is terrifying.
Yeah. And think about it. I was also raised, not my mother, but my father, with that kind of explosive, you didn't know what you were going to get personality. Mm. And I think it leads to people, who hold conflict.
Yeah.
And so here's what I want to say to you. You grew up in tremendous conflict.
Yeah.
And I think that you reached a point where you had a relief from it for a period of time. And when you came back, it went over you like a tidal wave. And so what we need to do is we need to start at the very beginning, which is, and you're not going to necessarily believe me saying this today,
that's cool.
and you'll probably say, yeah. But I need for you to begin to understand that you are a good boy. Do you know what I'm saying?
yeah, I do. Yeah.
You're not a bad boy. You didn't do anything wrong. Like, we need to start there, because bringing it back to that point of always having to monitor your own behavior, your own self, and say, am I good? Am I bad? Am I doing okay? Is it going to make her react? Is a place of panic that never ends. It's constant. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And I mean, you know, up until probably that time that we went away, actually, even though we didn't live with her, we lived close. It was still, you know, like when I went round to, in fact, I'm sure I get it still. Like if we go to visit, you know, I still get that, like, right, prepare yourself, you know.
Right.
It is less now. In fact, she's definitely softened as she's got older. And especially since I got a bit sick, she's a different person, you know.
But that's another important piece, by the way.
Yeah.
Is when we get sick, and when our whatever we want to call it, I don't want to call it our abusers, but our stressors in our life turn around a little bit. There is a unconscious, maybe a draw to stay sick.
Mm.
And so I want you to just put that on the side burner.
No, that's cool. In fact, I was walking the dog yesterday morning, and I was sort of mentally preparing to have this chat with you, and, you know, I was looking forward to it. But I was kind of thinking to myself, am I actually scared of being well again? You know, like, is there an element of I almost wouldn't know what to do with myself? Do you know what I mean? Like,
of course. Yeah.
You know, just questioning myself, I guess, in that sense, trying to be aware that there may be resistance to being well again, because for the last 4 years, this is all I've known, and it's almost becomes your crutch in a weird kind of way.
100%. And I think that's why I'm bringing it up. It's really, really important. So before we get into that, because I do want to get back to that piece of being scared to be well, have you ever heard of borderline personality disorder?
I mean, I've heard the term. I don't really understand it, but yeah.
I'm a pretty keen diagnostician, and I obviously haven't heard nearly enough about your mother to diagnose her with this, but I will say the way she presented is tremendously congruent with the aspects of borderline personality in several different ways. One is she was very unpredictable. So there was no way to know what you were going to get. And the second thing is she presented really well to the world, which makes it even more confusing for the child.
Yeah.
Because you have this mother who, like, a lot, like, one of the sort of benchmarks of borderline personality is other people will say to you, oh, your mom's so great.
Yeah, they did, you know, used, like, to say that all the time, actually.
Yeah. Your mom's the best. Like, oh God, you know, whereas you're like, you have no idea what I'm dealing with. But the thing that makes children of borderline mothers so susceptible to all this anxiety and this emotional input is the abuse, if you will, is subtle. It's not like she's beating you. It's more that she is rageful and then calm.
Yeah.
And then she is sort of thriving on that drama, and it's really all about her and what she's going through.
Yeah, totally.
And you know, so the reason I'm recognizing this in your story, and so one thing as a resource I really want to give you, and I would highly recommend you take advantage of this because I think it's going to help you tremendously.
I'll write it down now,
Is there is a book. You can get it on, you know, anywhere like you that sells books, I'm sure Amazon or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's called Understanding the Borderline Mother. It's a very thick sort of, it's a textbooky kind of book. It's a no joke book. I think it's like $50 or something.
It's, I mean, it's no joke. What you're saying is a bit like homework, yeah?
It is more than a bit like homework, yes.
Okay, cool.
It is, it's the big HW.
Yeah.
But I think you are going to awaken in the pages of that book. Okay. Because what I think really helps people who are raised in this fashion and are trying to heal the wounds of such a little guy that, you know, it's really hard to always go back and fully understand what he was like is to normalize it. I think you're going to read that book, and on the pages of that book, your whole life is going to come alive for you.
Okay.
And you're going to realize how not alone you are.
Yeah.
That, you know, this is a very, very common disorder. And the reason that personality disorders are so tricky is they're not like bipolar or schizophrenia or anything that has these big, bold, you know, sort of markers. It's this subtle, woven into somebody's personality, DNA kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where, like, this is just how they're always showing up. So it's not like you could say, oh, well, my mom was clinically depressed and she never got out of bed. You know,
that
might be easier to understand.
Yeah.
But personality disorders leave the child feeling crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, as I said earlier, kind of alluded to, that anxiety has always been a part of my life. I think although I never had spurts of anxiety in the same way, like, I showed symptoms of anxiety that I can remember really early on, you know, like fear of being alone, a few kind of, it's kind of embarrassing to admit, I guess, but as we're being completely honest, like, some slightly weird attachment issues with early girlfriends. Never too weird, but just I clinged on to those sort of relationships far longer than I probably than was healthy to, you know. And the odd spurt of anxiety attack that I at the time never knew what it was, but now it, you know, relating to it, so it's always been bubbling under the surface. I guess my subconscious was very good at keeping it out of the frame, you know?
Yeah. And that's what's sort of remarkable about every one of the TMS patients that I've ever talked to, which is, you know, almost everyone in the world, but the ones that actually admit it and, you know, are willing to have the conversation, is we're all such high functioning, aware, awake individuals.
Yeah.
You know, this is not something that gets people who are, like, you know, happy and clueless and walking through life. This is about deep thinkers who really take our experience very, very seriously and are analyzing it a lot.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that just makes sense for everything you described. You know, you had this unknowable mother, and then you get to the age where you can be, you know, a little man and you can start having a girlfriend.
Yeah.
And it feels like you don't know how to go about that. So you're going to maybe come on too strong and attach too hard and hold on too long because you're confused. And that's why I said earlier, we need to kind of start with, you're a good boy. Like, you're not bad. You didn't do bad things. You're a good boy.
Yeah.
Like, because I think that what happens to kids is we start to our only mirror is our parent. And, you know, you only had one of them. You didn't have another. You didn't have a daddy to be like, oh, you know, she's mom's just a little nuts today. Like, let's go get an ice cream. You know, you didn't have that.
No. And I did have a stepfather around. They're still together, has been around since I was 15. And lots of positive things have come from that. But of course, because I was 15, he never had any. Either wasn't allowed to, or I didn't want him to, or for whatever reason, he never had any sort of fatherly input from an emotional sense. He just had a very good impact from a, you know, teaching me, like, hate to bracket this, but like men things, you know, like building stuff and using my hands, and, you know, and my love for the outdoors comes from him. And so there's been a lot of really great things that have come from him, but he is quite a, he's a very old and typical stuck in his ways man, so he's not huge on the emotion front anyway. So I never had an emotional input from him, but I had some good other stuff. But it's funny really, because mum kind of governs him with an iron fist still as well, so
yeah. Well, I think you're gonna see him in the pages of the book I just recommended too.
Okay, cool.
Because there's a certain kind of man that is with this personality.
Yeah, sure.
And it normally is just like that.
Yeah,
so
okay.
I think we're on the right track. But you know, that is wonderful, and I'm thrilled for you. And Adam, even in this, you know, little while of knowing you today, you obviously are a fantastic guy. Oh. You know, like you made it.
It's very
kind.
Thank you. I mean,
it's for real. I get such a beautiful energy from you. You're a good guy. You're a good man, and you're going to be so great once you are on board with what I'm saying.
Yep.
And once we get you all healed up, and it's going to be truly wonderful for you, because, you know, you do obviously have a really good, solid foundation in yourself, in your heart. You know, not everything is nurture. We come into this world with a certain nature, and you've got one for looking at the positive side of things. You know, it's just that you've been really held down by these symptoms that have obviously overwhelmed you. I'm sure it's not been easy.
No, it's you know, and for sort of the benefit of some of your listeners, really, like there's been some very dark times, and, you know, I'm quite good when I'm talking to people at kind of putting a positive spin on it, you know, but the truth is that there's been days in the last few years where I just didn't, you know, I didn't want to live anymore, you know. I truly, like, you know, a grown man in his 30s on the lounge floor crying his eyes out, not having a clue what the hell to do with himself, you know. And my wife having to, you know, deal with that on a, not a regular basis, but a semi-regular basis at least. So, you know, I just wanted to say that, because I know, I'm aware that sometimes when I'm having these conversations, I'm quite good at being pragmatic and factual about my feelings. But the reality is that it's not that coherent all the time, you know. So
absolutely, and thank you for sharing that. And I think that is how a lot of people feel. I can't tell you how many times the first interaction I get with someone is, "I was planning my suicide."
Yeah,
you know, and. It's I hear it all the time, which is more the reason that I'm so propelled into the world to share this message, because oftentimes those letters begin with, "I was preparing for my suicide until I found your work."
Oh, it's true, Chloe. It's exactly the same for me. My first email to you was really out of desperation, you know? It was. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk, let's live in the solution for you. Mm. Okay.
Mm.
Let's do that. So the first thing I want to say to you is, today is the first day of the rest of your life. Today is the first day of anything you want.
Okay.
And you need to believe that. And we need to kind of shake your shoulders a little bit, because there's no other choice.
No, there isn't, actually. No.
No. There's nothing else that's going to get you well. And I'm 100% sure of that, because you can't deal with TMS by fixing the part of the body where it's coming out.
No,
it doesn't work.
No, you're absolutely right, because I've spent years trying to do that. Including like for this gastritis that I have, and sort of reflux, that type of thing. You know, I've been anally retentive in terms of trying to fix that, both mainstream medically and every alternative consideration that you could think of, you know. And it doesn't heal. So
no, and it won't, because what we're talking about is brain science. Yeah. And your relationship with yourself, based on the mirror that your mother held up for you for 15 years before this stepfather walked in. That's a long time, you
it
know.
Is,
we,
yeah.
we bake a lot of that cookie in the first 15 years.
Damn right.
And so that is not going to be healed by an antacid.
No, no.
You know, and I think, and I say that not to put down the Western medical model or the holistic alternative model. It's just when you're dealing with something as powerful as brain science, when you're dealing with something as powerful as a brain that can flood your body with chemicals to the point where you can lift a car off a baby. Yeah. When we're dealing with that strong of a force, when it wants to protect you, when we're dealing with a brain that can, you could run like a marathon runner if a lion was chasing you.
Yeah.
No, right now, no matter how shitty you feel, that is a formidable adversary. And when I say adversary, it's not against you, but it's just a force that we need to reckon with. And that's not going to be helped by small means.
No, you know what I mean? I can relate to that because up until recently, I've still been able to partake in mountain biking and cycling, you know, at a much sort of lower level. And for the most part, when I'm doing the thing that I absolutely adore, or I'm out with my friends in nature, I have energy, and my feelings of unwell or dis-ease are improved, you know, or reduced, whatever way you want to look at it. But then shortly after that, yeah, and then shortly after that, I fall into a pit of despair and feeling unwell. So, and I've questioned that, like, well, look, if I was really sick, how would I even be able to do those things, you know? You know, and unfortunately, the last few weeks have been, doesn't matter, but particularly bad, and I haven't actually been able to do anything. But it's interesting because, you know, if you're really sick, you know, if you have a serious illness like cancer or something that literally physically prevents you from doing those things, you just can't do it, right? But I have. So, yeah. Anyway, sorry, okay. That was a digression, but
it's all important. It's all important, and that's also very typical. So what I want you to realize is today is the first day of anything you want, and if you want to be totally well, which I know there's some conflict, and we'll circle back to that before the end of the session, but I do want to say to you, there are three facets to my work, as you know, but I'll repeat them: believe, do the work, and patience and kindness for yourself.
Yeah.
And you, my friend, are going to have to do all three. And you're going to have to say, I don't care if I have doubts. I don't care how much resistance I encounter. I am doing this and it is non-negotiable.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, I mean, this is, you are saving your own life here. You are going to be well in short order. This is not going to be years of you working on this.
Okay.
If you do what I'm saying, it's almost like flipping a switch, because we're starting with a totally new intention.
Mm.
The intention is you're going to be totally well. The intention is I am literally 100% sure that there's nothing wrong with you. You're not sick. You feel sick. You know, your body is feeling sick, but that doesn't mean you are sick.
No, I'm clearly not sick, because every freaking test I have shows that, you know, most of the stuff is well within its normal range. So, I mean, you know, it's clear that my body on a cellular level is functioning okay, you know?
You're not sick. What people need to understand, and I think it's so helpful for me in my own life, feelings aren't facts.
No.
They are important and they must be dealt with, but they are not facts. And so you feel sick. So that's what you feel right now. And we're honoring that, and we're going to be able to talk about that. But you are not sick.
Mm.
And so the first is believe. And your belief right now, Adam, has got to come from just make a decision. Yeah. Fuck it. I'm not living like this anymore. And if I'm not going to live like this anymore,
yeah.
I'm going to believe in what Nicole is saying, or else why would I be going through all this trouble of writing her and being on a podcast for thousands of people to listen to my life, you know?
Yeah.
So that's the first.
Okay.
The second is, now talk to me about your journal speak practice. Do you have one? What's the deal?
Yeah. I basically use a thing called Evernote, you know, like a journaling app on my laptop. Predominantly just because my handwriting is horrendous. And interestingly, since this journey started, I struggle to write a page of writing before my hand just gives out. I mean, that's really odd, right? But
not really.
Okay. Yeah. Like I almost lose control of my hand when I start to get halfway through a writing. So anyway, so I've been using this thing called Evernote, and I'm just going to try and open it whilst we're on here. Hopefully it doesn't do anything to the background. You can still hear me, right? Yeah.
I can.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. So, you know, I start with like daily life stresses and break down each one of those. And then I've tried to write about each one of those stresses, you know, individually. And, you know, I've done a fair bit of like writing headings under my childhood, you know, like stressful pregnancy, 2 months premature, mother was depressed, anxious, you know, each one of these sort of then written a paragraphs about each one, you know. I've tried.
All right. So
yeah, sorry.
Let me, it's okay. I know in the interest of time, I want to just give you some instructions.
Yeah.
So here, have you been willing, capable, doing that? You take one topic, have you made the three lists that I recommend?
Yeah. There was personality, right?
Well, it's childhood, daily life, and personality.
Yes, I've done those. Yes.
Okay. So have you taken a piece like for childhood?
Yeah.
I would like you to pick it. This is just an example. Pick a moment that you remember, a moment where you were in terror of, you know, walking into your mother's house, or a moment that she was screaming at you, I should have just adopted you out, or whatever.
Pick a
moment that you remember. Mm-hmm. Have you sat and written for 20 minutes without stopping, really? You know, I mean, obviously, if you can't think of something to say, you could say, I don't know what I'm saying. I don't know what I'm doing. You know, keep your fingers moving until – have you done that and really allowed that little guy, that sensitive, you know, vulnerable little guy to speak? Have you done stuff like that?
I have done a bit of it. I mean, you know, I actually wrote a letter last weekend. I actually like wrote a letter to my mum telling her basically about how I felt, you know. But
not to give to her, just a journal.
No, just a journal. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that doesn't.
I want it to be much bolder than anything you'd give to her.
Oh, yeah. No. This is, you know, like swear words and, you know, massive things in capitals. And, you know, it's heartfelt, you know.
Okay, so you have the rubric, so you know how to do that. So what I want you to do in terms of the do the work is just pick one thing a day, set your timer for 20 minutes, and really express for him what he needs to say. And sometimes it's a really good exercise to go back to a certain time period. So like, you know, my son is in 9th grade, and oftentimes when I'm feeling vulnerable for him, I need to go back to me in 9th grade, which is a really hard year, probably the hardest year in my upbringing.
Yeah.
And say to her, I'm right here. I have absolutely no agenda. What is it like for you? Just tell me. And let her speak, and not let her speak necessarily to my father or my mother or my friends or what I felt was hurting me. Let her speak to me, which is a kind, loving space where I'm saying, I'm just here to listen. And she did. I mean, it was really, really transformative when I did this one exercise, because I was holding too much pain around my own child. And to have her tell me what it was like for her, I realized that the pain I hold around him is really a lot of her pain. I'm really looking to heal her life, whereas he's okay. And so for you, I would like you to just once a day, non-negotiable, to go back there in all different phases of life and just start listening to him. And don't watch the clock. There's no time frame for this. I don't want you to be like, am I better? Am I better? Am I better? None of that. You're just going to go and do it. chop wood, carry water. You know, it's like a Buddhist kind of mentality. Sure. We're just going to do the work and then it's done. 20 minutes of journal speak followed by 10 minutes of loving kindness meditation.
Okay.
Sit with that little boy, sit with yourself right now, this tender guy who is a lovely guy, and say, you're all right. We're going to be all right. You know, it's like, hey, bud, I'm with you now. I'm with you. I know you didn't have a daddy. Let's talk about that in our journal speak, but I'm here now. Mm-hmm. And we can always reparent ourselves. Always, always. This is 100% possible for all of us. And so the third is, I want you to be patient and kind. When you feel anxious, say, I know. There you are. I knew you were here. So you've always been trying to protect me. It's all right. Let's sit with the anxiety then. It's all right. Yeah. Who cares? That's just how we're presenting today. No judgment. Remember, the more inflamed you get, the more you're sending the nervous system a sign that you need more protection.
Yeah.
So just that kind of whatever, you know, it's just another day in paradise kind of feeling. Sure. We're doing the work. It's going to be all right. You know, and then the only other instruction I have instead, you know, aside from those three main pillars is on those days where you start to feel better.
Yeah.
Your responsibility to yourself and to the universe and to every person who is listening, so it's a massive responsibility, is to believe it and to go out and enjoy your life for a minute, an hour, a day. I don't care what it is. It's a grave responsibility to start to take back your life as you start to feel ready, because that is just as important as any of the work you're doing, is sending the signal. Yes, it's like positive reinforcement. I feel good today. I'm going to go grab an hour on the bike.
Yeah.
And if I start feeling unwell, I'm allowed to go home and lay down and cry. I don't care what has to happen, but it's, you have to believe it.
Okay.
And to carry on. And I also want you to absolutely get right online and get that book, Understanding the Borderline Mother.
Yeah, I'm going to order it now.
It is going to bring such connection for you. I know it. Okay. I can't wait to hear it. I want you to write to me and tell me how that lands for you.
Yeah, I'll do that.
So, and the final piece I want to say about being scared to be well, just table that for now. Just say, you know what? We'll deal with that when we get to it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Just because that's very real, but usually that is where I deal with people in like the last 10%, where they're like basically back to life, almost everything is well, but they just can't kick that last little bit. And I say, let it go. Yes, life is scary. Yes, it feels like you're going to walk through the life like an innocent lamb in the pasture and the wolf is going to jump out for you. And I know that's how it feels, but guess what? That's the best. This is the best it gets. This is like the best case scenario.
Yeah, I guess that's life. I guess it's normal to feel like you're well, but then the part your subconscious is like waiting for it to get worse again. Do you know what I mean?
Of course, because I have
moments of that. I have had moments where I've, felt 10-20% better, and then it's like, oh, well, you know, might not be like this tomorrow, and then the cycle starts again, right?
And what I want you to do is I want you to just sit tenderly with that part of yourself. Health anxiety is just TMS. That's all it is. It's just trying to protect you and say, when you feel it, I want you to pause, and I want you to say, I want you to really pay attention to these signals that you're getting, because there's information that you're receiving from your system. So when you feel that health anxiety, I want you to press your pause button on your old 80s tape recorder.
Yeah.
So it stays down. So you have a minute, and I want you to say, I understand that you're trying to protect me, and I get it. I feel you. I'm not ignoring you. You're scared that if I stop having stomach things, all of a sudden I'm going to have a brain aneurysm or whatever the hell else could be worse. You know,
yeah, sure.
I get it. I get it that this is just you trying to protect me, and I hear you. That's it. That's all you just hear it.
Okay.
And you know, as you start to get better, you'll be able to do a second step there, which is I hear you. And guess what? I don't need the protection. I'm okay.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I promise you, Adam, if you walk this path with the power of the intention that I'm suggesting today, your entire life is going to change.
Okay. Cool. It's exciting.
It is, and it's possible for you.
Yeah, that's I sometimes allow myself to you know, you have these times where you allow yourself to feel like, oh, how good would it be if this stuff wasn't here, you know? And it can be quite overwhelming sometimes, because the thought of not having it is just, yeah, I mean, well, I'm sure lots of your listeners will know exactly, and yourself, right? I mean, know exactly what I mean, because the thought of not having it is just like, there's nothing better in the world.
I just want you to think of it this way. 100% you're not going to have it. But the you're not going to have it is a certain amount of miles away, right? So I've just dropped you've been in the middle of the forest, and you've been looking around, and every tree looks the same, and you have no idea how to get out. And today I have airdropped you the instructions. You've got a map, you've got a canteen full of water that will never deplete, you have food, you have a big backpack, you got your hiking boots. And now I've told you how to go. You got to walk, though.
Yeah.
You got to, and it's going to be hard days. And there's some days it's going to be really cold, and it's going to be some days it's going to rain and you're going to be wet. There's some days it's going to be so hot and the sun's going to burn your skin. But if you keep walking, you'll get out. So it's there, but you just have to realize the strength has to come from you, and you've got it.
Yeah, I like that analogy. It's romantic, but it's poignant as well, you know?
Yeah. I like romantic and poignant.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
My jam.
Yeah, well, I guess I'm British, so I should probably claim to like those things as well, really.
Yeah, well, you know.
Yeah. Okay.
So do you have any other questions before we wrap?
I don't think so. No. No. Well, wow. No, my brain's a bit of a muddle anyway. So, no, I think some more intentional practice of these things is the next step, really.
For sure, for sure. All right, well, Adam, thank you so much for joining me on Real Time Heal today.
It's been a pleasure.
Appreciate it so much. All right, guys, well, Adam and I are now, I'm gonna wake up and start my day. And Adam's got his work cut out for him, but for all you guys out there, I hope that you had great benefit from listening to Adam's brave sharing today. And until next time, this has been The Cure for Chronic Pain with me, Nicole Sachs, Real Time Heal. See you next time. Bye-bye.